everyone. My name is Adi Dinar. I'm chairing this complaint screening committee today. It's 8:33 in the morning, according to my computer, which sometimes is plus minus 1 minute early or late. So I call the complaint screening committee of the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners to order. Ms. Michelson, will you please call the roll?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Dr. Catarino?
Present.
Mr. Dinar?
Present.
Dr. Stewart?
Present.
Okay, we have quorum.
Thank you. So before we get into the cases scheduled for today's review, I want to give some important information for everyone who is in attendance. The Complaint Screening Committee, pursuant to Arizona Revised Statute Section 32-2081, subsection H, may dismiss the complaints appearing on this agenda or refer them to the full board for consideration and action. Complaints dismissed by the committee shall not be disclosed in response to a telephone inquiry or placed on the board's website, according to ARS Section 32-2081, subsection H1. Upon a vote of a majority of the quorum, the committee may go into executive session on any item on the agenda, according to ARS Section 38-431.03, subsection A2 for legal advice, or under subsection A3 to receive, A2 for confidential records and A3 to receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney, Ms. Beth Campbell. Ms. Campbell, welcome to the board CSC meeting. Please keep in mind that the chair reserves the right to change the order of the items on the agenda based upon the parties present. Now, this is an important instruction. Please use initials for patients, children, and the complainant. In addition, do not state any specific diagnoses in the open session. Instead, please just state the diagnosis. Keep in mind that the content of many records involved in these complaints is confidential and the content should not be discussed in a public meeting. Keep in mind that the committee will go into executive session to discuss any confidential records. A person or a representative of a person who has filed a complaint and is present at today's meeting may make a brief statement to the committee of up to 5 minutes only when prompted by the chair, which is me. Additionally, the licensee or respondent who is the subject of the complaint will also have a chance to make a brief 5 minute statement only when prompted by the chair. The committee may also have questions for the complainant or respondent after their statements are made. Please keep in mind that only individuals directly involved in the complaint, which are the complainant and the respondent, may address the committee and make a statement. If the committee wishes to hear from any other party, it will make this request during the case review. For everyone who is attending today, please keep your audio on mute. When prompted by the committee to speak, the complainant, the respondent, and their legal representative may unmute themselves at that time. Please note that individuals in attendance who speak out without committee approval will be warned twice by the chair not to interrupt. If the interruption continues after the second warning, the individual will be removed from the Zoom meeting and not permitted to re-enter the meeting. So with those important preliminaries in mind, let's move to the first complaint that is scheduled for review. Case number 23-40 for Travis Munerlin Kirkham. If I'm saying your last name right, I apologize. Dr. Catarino, since you're the lead, please provide the committee a brief overview.
I actually didn't realize I was the one to do that. I thought Jennifer was doing that. It's my first CSC. But my understanding, as I recall, is that the complainant was concerned that Dr. Munerlin used a certain diagnosis that he did not feel he qualified for that diagnosis, nor did he believe that Dr. Munerlin had the authority to make that diagnosis or the competency to make that diagnosis. So he was concerned about that. He was also concerned that there was an exercise done in one session where Dr. Munerlin instructed him to write down words that he associated with God and then cross out ones that he did not feel appropriate. And after that session, the complainant said that he lost his faith in God, which had been something that had been very strong before and had held him through a lot. And so he was concerned about both of those. Dr. Munerlin had indicated that he had tried to refer the patient out to someone that was a specialist in that disorder. And he also offered a lower fee to help with the complainant's financial issues. And so, I don't know, the complaint came, I think Dr. Runnellan had seen the patient about 20 times, but the complaint came and the particular session was in fairly about the first third in, and there was no further discussion until about 6 months later when the complaint came in. So I didn't realize I was the one to do that, so I'm sorry. I thought Jennifer did that. If there's anything I left out or you want to add, please go ahead.
Thank you, Dr. Katarina. I think that's sufficient, and I see Ms. Michelson agreeing with that statement. So I see that the complainant SR is present. At this point, you may unmute yourself, and again, please just use initials when referring to yourself, and you may address the committee for up to 5 minutes.
Oh, thank you. It took me a while to make a decision to file a complaint. I had to really think through my motivation. I have friends that are therapists, really tried to talk through this. And my intention is just for feedback. I think it's really important to share my experience. I'm not coming to this with shame, blame, guilt, right or wrong. I simply want to share what this journey has done for me. I appreciate the person that gave a brief synopsis of what my experience is. I think there's twofold. I'll do my best to explain this. I feel like I'm having an identity crisis as a result of my time with Travis. I was a very, very strong Christian. I'll show you these are the Bibles that I had referred to. I kept a strong log of just personal scriptures that I had written in my life to kind of sustain me. Christianity was definitely the foundation of my belief system. The exercise that Travis asked me to embark on, asked me to list out all the names of God that I had had. It was to be as extensive as possible. I felt like I was asked to embark on blasphemy. In my faith, you don't question God, but I decided to do it anyway. And I could understand maybe the reason for it. I was very attached to my belief that God would solve my problems. He had taken care of me, sustained me, and helped me through some pretty traumatic childhood and other things. I had a pretty traumatic divorce also. But I think that belief may have attached me to beliefs about my ex. So I understand what the process did. I now consider myself probably an atheist. It's been very difficult for me to relate to family and friends. And I think, you know, it basically changed my personality. I used to pray every night, go to sleep, wake up in the morning. I feel like the foundation of who I was as a human being has just been taken from me. And it's left me, you know, fearful, afraid, with no real source of help. And I would find myself throughout the day say, God help me, now that I think I don't believe in God anymore. So it's been very difficult to move from or to be motivated and even excited. I felt like that was kind of the beginning of my kind of distress as I started to work with Travis. but I think the diagnosis kind of added injury to insult for me, because it made me feel like a lot of what I was experiencing was my fault. Travis had told me once before that he had a teacher that told him that a lot of men were misdiagnosed, especially gay men, with this particular diagnosis. I would ask, you know, how are you coming to the meeting and looking at me? You know, am I quote unquote normal, or are you projecting this diagnosis on me already? I was seeing a therapist before Travis that retired. I had known him for about 20 years. Travis did contact the therapist. That therapist disagreed with the diagnosis. When I spoke to that therapist, the advice that therapist had given me was ignore the diagnosis, find another therapist, and do not tell him about Travis's diagnosis. The reason that's difficult for me is because twofold. The diagnosis to me is akin to a cancer diagnosis in the mental health area. And this is coming from, I'm not like you guys. I don't understand this stuff a lot. I had to do a lot of research. It was very, very distressful to be diagnosed. It was not only distressful for me, it was distressful for my family, my mother, my sister, my friends, people trying to understand it. And again, it was scary to talk to people because it's a scarlet letter. If I tell you right now, like, do not think of a purple elephant. Don't think of a fuzzy cat. When you mention this diagnosis, it's very difficult for people not to project that on you. So I understand why the former therapist said to me, find another therapist. Don't tell them the diagnosis, because I would have a scarlet letter. I found that also very distressing, because what that was asking me to do is to seek help from a therapist and not be totally honest with them. And how does a person embark on therapy if their initial intention is to be dishonest? It makes it really, really difficult. So it's put me in a very precarious situation. My divorce has left me, I wouldn't say penniless. I'm on access. I don't have money. I'm on food stamps. I don't have access to healthcare like other people would. This diagnosis requires specific treatment that's not always easy to find, especially when you're on access. So I'm pretty distressed about what my options are, because do I ignore it? Which I don't, you know, anyone that's dealing with a cancer diagnosis, if you have someone that tells you you have cancer, you don't may not want to believe it, but you can't ignore it. So I don't know where to find help. I don't know where to go to next. I feel like I've been kind of left out to dry. This is not meant for shame, blame, guilt, right or wrong. This is my experience. I can understand why Travis may have gone down this path. You know, for him to be told by his professor that these things are misdiagnosed, that seed was planted in his head. He may have been looking for that. Once he thought that that's who I was as a human being, you know, I can understand that he believes, well, I cannot treat this person any longer. And so to move from me, it's reasonable. It makes sense to me. But it really did not, it was not helpful. The treatment that I received left me worse off than when I started. My faith was decimated. I was left with more questions than answers. It was traumatic to my family. I am now left feeling much more confused and with less tools, I think is the bottom line, you know. one thing that really stood out for me was the other day when I was sharing this with one of my best friends, he asked me, he said, Sam, do you still believe in Jesus? And I said, no, I don't. And he wept. He wept and he wept and he wept. He wasn't weeping for himself. He was weeping for me because he had known what an anchor God had been for me all my life. I mean, had taken me through some very, very difficult times. So not only did I no longer have God, I no longer had a therapist, and I was diagnosed with a mental illness. You know, all those things, you know, created additional trauma.
Thank you, SR. I mean, we have a sense of what occurred, and thank you for your statement. And thank you for being courageous to share your experiences with us. I want to see if the committee members, Dr. Stewart and Dr. Caterino, have any questions for SR at this time.
Not at this time.
I wondered, when did you give permission for Dr. Mummelin to speak to your previous psychologist? Was that at the towards, because the phone call was made in June, but he had started seeing you in November, I think, October, November.
Yeah, it was towards the end of our sessions. I'm trying to believe correctly. It was when I was, you know, questioning the diagnosis. I think we had talked about him speaking to my previous therapist.
And when did you first get the treatment plan?
It was towards the end of our when we were deciding that he was no longer capable of.
So you didn't get the treatment plan at the beginning of what you were going to work on. You got it at the end.
Yes, I think I have a date here that says a treatment plan. It doesn't really give the date.
I saw I have date of around April 25th or so.
Okay.
Does that sound right to you?
Yes.
So,
created on April 21st, 2022. Okay.
So, I was just wondering, did you question, you know, why the treatment plan came at the end when you were no longer going to be working with him?
Not necessarily questioned it, because I had realized at that time that he had made up his mind about what was going on. And I think this was an opportunity, not necessarily maybe a treatment plan for him and me, but maybe a treatment plan that I could embark on my own.
Okay. All right. I'll hold off now. But he knew, you did inform Dr. Mummelin of your previous psychologist in the beginning, that he could contact him. You had listed that on your paperwork or not?
I'm not sure if I had listed it in the beginning that he could, but I was always open. I feel like I'm an open book. I feel like trauma is destroyed in safe places. I did my absolute best I went through a leadership development company to learn how to be afraid, to jump out of trees, lean over cliffs, walk on tight wires. Like in this moment, it's scary, but you learn how to say scary things to your therapist. And I felt like I was as authentic as possible. And I was always open to any communication he wanted to have with any therapist I had previously.
So, and were you aware at the discharge statement, there was a different diagnosis put on the paperwork?
I wasn't fully aware, and I really didn't understand, because I know it wasn't the diagnosis, so to speak. But the thing that became confusing, I understand what it said at the end, the symptoms sort of, but what didn't correlate for me was, if it was simply symptoms, why was that the reason for termination of the of our sessions? Do you see what I'm saying? How there's a
disconnect
there? Yeah. Okay.
Okay. And that's all I have for SR.
Thank you, Dr. Caterino. So at this point, I see Dr. Mummelin. Thank you for being here. And I see you're with your attorney, Robin Burgess. Thank you for being here. Good morning. So if you would like to introduce yourselves, and we'll give you a commensurate amount of time to make a statement, if you wish to make one.
Thank you. If you don't mind, I'll start because I assume that you're going to probably want to speak with Dr. Munnerlyn directly. So let me have him go after me so that I'm out of the loop there. I just want to comment on a few of the points that were just made. It sounds like there are maybe three issues. So the first one is the issue relating to the client's relationship and image of God. Let me just kind of get a timeline for you. So first of all, Dr. Munnerlyn first saw this particular client in couple sessions for a while with another client. And after several sessions, they chose not to proceed as couples. And the client asked to continue seeing Dr. Munnerlyn to deal with issues that he had personally that were causing a lot of problems in his life, including prior trauma, very significant trauma, which was associated with his religion. There was a significant trauma incident, or more than one incident associated with his religion, that has been part intertwined with shame and traumatic feelings ever since for this particular client. They started working together in the early fall, and then shortly into their sessions, one of the issues they were trying to address is separating the feelings of trauma and pain and shame from the positive feelings that the religion brought to this client, because it was something that was important to him. So Dr. Munnerlyn asked him to sit down and go through and just come up with a list of names and words and feelings associated with the religion. And then they sat down after the client did that and went through kind of all of his feelings, processing his thoughts and feelings about what that religion brought up in him. And then said, now get rid of the things that are harmful to you. Cross those off. So he was trying to separate and get the client to mentally separate the good in the religion from the trauma and the pain that some of that was tied up, to try and get him to realize that they are separate things. And it was one project that was done in November, never discussed again, never complained of. The first time Travis heard that there was any issue related to this exercise is in the complaint that was well over a year later. The complaint was filed, so the client continued to treat with Travis until June of the following year, and then the complaint was made February of this year. So the project that they did, the exercise, was in November of 21. And the first Dr. Munnerlyn heard of this was in February of 23. Obviously, if this had been raised during the course of their continued interactions, it would have been addressed. They would have been able to work it through. That never happened. And it's also quite interesting, you'll see from the records, that the client was repeatedly asking Dr. Munnerlyn to continue seeing him, even April, May, and June, after they had had the discussion about the client's disagreement or distress about being told he had certain traits that were consistent with a diagnosis. The diagnosis was never made. It was just a notice that there were some traits that are in the way of getting to the trauma work. But you'll see from the records that the client was repeatedly asking, can I keep treating with you anyway? Can I keep treating with you anyway? So that seems to be a little bit inconsistent with the sense that during the treatment, or even towards the end of the treatment, there was some kind of problem that the client had with the way Dr. Munnerlyn was handling him. So that's the issue, I think, relating to God. And the other issue is the diagnosis. And we've heard the term diagnosis repeatedly here. The records will bear this out. There was never an actual diagnosis of any condition made. Dr. Munnerlyn was working with this client for months and got to know him fairly well and recognized that he was having issues that were getting in the way of them getting to the trauma work, which was what they were trying to address, dealing with the trauma of these incidents earlier in life, dealing with the trauma of the divorce, dealing with all these different traumas. But Dr. Munnerlyn recognized that they could not get to trauma work until some of these other issues that were creating distractions for the client could be addressed. And in doing so, Dr. Munnerlyn pointed out that there were certain characteristics that were not diagnostic of, but certainly consistent with traits related to his diagnosis. He never gave a diagnosis. In fact, the records, once he noted this in about April of last year, all the chart says is rule out. It does not have an actual diagnosis. And it was just a concern born of a recognition of a series of characteristics, traits, behaviors and problems that were really impeding progress moving forward with the actual hard trauma work. At that point, Dr. Munnerlyn asked the client to work with somebody who was better trained in dealing with those issues and those traits. Dr. Munnerlyn did not feel that he was personally had the background that would do the best service for this client. He could work on the trauma, but only after the patient got past some of these other issues. He made multiple referrals and gave those referrals, and they're in the chart, to the client to try and get him connected with somebody who could work on those things. The client was resistant, wanted to continue working with Dr. Munnerlyn. And when the client raised a concern and a complaint about the use of the term that this diagnosis carries, again, Dr. Munnerlyn again noted, I'm saying you have some traits. Don't worry about a diagnosis. Don't focus on that word. Focus on the issues, the characteristics that we want to work on. And then at the client's request, he went through and changed his discharge summary, walked through it with him, read it line by line, and took out any reference to that particular diagnosis or the traits related to that diagnosis. So Dr. Munnerlyn's not saying, hey, I made a diagnosis. He's saying, I found some traits. They were getting in the way of moving forward. And I needed the patient to go find someone who could work with those issues so he could get past them and move into the trauma work. So that's kind of what happened here. Ultimately, obviously, the client did move on. Dr. Munnerlyn did give him a number of referrals. Dr. Munnerlyn bent over backwards to be helpful to this particular client. After the first session, the client complained that he couldn't afford the treatment. Dr. Munnerlyn reduced his fee very significantly to a fee that the client could afford. He was doing everything he could to make this work, to help the client. He feels obviously bad if the client is not happy with the way things worked out. But, you know, therapy can be hard and it can raise hard questions and issues. And you do have to grapple with things. And sometimes you do have to kind of think through hard issues. And maybe that had gotten started here and it needs to continue. It's working itself through. Also, I just want to make a comment that I want to make sure it's clear that Dr. Munnerlyn never asked the client to be dishonest to future therapists or any caregivers. This was apparently something that some other therapist recommended. Dr. Munnerlyn would never have suggested, hey, hide something. That would obviously be between the client and future therapists as to whether the client wanted to say, well, hey, this other person is concerned about these particular traits, or just wanted the new therapist to, you know, draw his or her own conclusions. And finally, we can't be sure what the client told others, family, friends. That isn't something that Dr. Munnerlyn was involved with. The client didn't have to share or divulge information to others if he didn't want to. That's a voluntary decision on his part, and whatever feedback he got from others is really of his own choosing. So I'm going to leave it at that. I'm going to thank the board and the committee members here for their time. And if you have questions of Dr. Munnerlyn, he is here and willing and able to speak.
Thank you, Ms. Burgess. Dr. Caterina, I see you have your hand up.
Ms. Burgess, if you look at the treatment plan and discharge, there was a diagnosis made. So at one, you said there was never any diagnosis. There was a diagnosis.
The treatment plan. Are you talking about the one?
The document of April 22nd.
Okay, let me try and find it. If you're looking at the diagnosis and treatment plan, is that what you're referring to?
Yes.
Under at the top, it says on that same document.
I think it's on that document. That's what I have. But there is another diagnosis.
There's a second document where, after going through this first one with the client, Dr. Munerlin changed it, and he has a secondary discharge summary note that was done in May. Okay.
So
that's the one that says relationship distress with spouse or intimate partner, and then other specified trauma and stressor related disorder.
Mm-hmm. And there's another one I see, but okay. But there is a diagnosis made.
I'm trying to see. I apologize. I just don't know what you're looking at specifically.
Well, I have that it was April 22nd, but I thought it was in the treatment plan. But
every time that diagnosis is noted, it specifically says rule out next.
But that's not. I'm talking about the other diagnosis.
Yes, sorry for the back and forth confusion. So, I think I'm looking at our PDF materials, page number 80.
Thank you,
Dr. Cadrino. Is that correct?
I think so. I'm trying to pull that up right now.
Committee members, because I'm sure that Ms. Burgess has done a very thorough job of reviewing the information, but to the extent that the committee is having questions about what diagnosis was made, if a diagnosis was made,
and yes, then,
Dr. Munerlin is really the person that the committee has available to it, and it's probably the best source of information. Again,
thank you. Yes, I just because she mentioned it and I disagreed. Okay.
Thank you. Or may I? Okay, I see a head nodding. Hold on. Thank you to the committee. Thank you for the board. I have to get that out of the way. I appreciate it. I'm anxious, so I'm sped up a little bit. I want to answer the question. To my attorney, she may not catch this, but I'm going to, when saying there was never a diagnosis made, I think more specifically, never diagnosed. Once he and I had that conversation and I got rid of
it. We need to be careful with that.
Okay. So maybe just for clarification and yet to remain respectful, maybe we call the, maybe we can refer to the diagnosis at issue. Is that, if that would be fair nomenclature to use that way, we can just agree that that's what we're going to call it.
Okay.
That's really all I have that I was stating on. Are there questions for me, I think?
Dr. Caterina?
Yes, but I don't know if these should be in the... Well, I'll ask you, when... what is the purpose? What's the difference between a rule out and a provisional diagnosis? When would you use one and when the other?
When would I use a rule out is when, that's been a long time. That question has been, I really don't use rule out very much anymore. And a provisional diagnosis, I haven't had to answer that question in a minute. So I don't want to give a wrong answer.
Okay. Well, and are you aware that the rule out is not listed in the DSM?
Yes, I am. I am aware of that.
Okay. So you would use a rule out when you're you're going to have this as a temporary diagnosis and you're in the quest of gaining more information to make a definitive diagnosis. Maybe there would be testing or something else. So
was my training and understanding. Yes, ma'am.
But I don't see that there was anything done to, make a decision to eliminate the rule out? You know, I don't know what steps did you take to just make the decision then if this was a true diagnosis or not? Because, you know, rule out, you have it for months, you know. Yes.
I didn't add that diagnosis on there until I think it was April.
The rule out one?
Yes, ma'am. Yes.
Oh, I see that on the progress notes from individual.
It back populates.
Oh.
So when I printed these, it's just going to populate whatever in that moment I have. So I can tell you my. Oh, let me slow down. Yep, I think I lost your question. I'm sorry.
Okay, so I was saying that when you use a rule out, it's like I'm going to. I mean, first of all, it's not really used in the DSM, but then if you do that, it's like I'm going to do further gather further information to make a definitive diagnosis. What attempts did you make to clarify the rule out?
With that logic in mind, when I put the rule out on there, my thinking was that as a client had said earlier, that he would take that and the treatment plan to the next provider and then start to rule out that that is or is not the diagnosis regardless, but it's more, and then, right.
Well, it's confusing because I didn't know it was back populated and I saw that diagnosis from the fall and then you continued to see him for months. I thought you would have been doing something to clarify that diagnosis over that time.
I really just want to make sure it's clear. And if it's on a paperwork, I have not believed that the diagnosis in question has ever been a formal diagnosis.
Could rule out which
characteristics.
Yes.
Okay. I just want to be very.
But I'm saying rule out is a temporary thing where you gather more information. And what attempts did you make to clarify your diagnosis?
Well, I went through the DSM and went through line by line and went for the characteristics of said trait. And I do believe that there were 2 to 3 traits or characteristics that were part of it. Could there be that's where I was saying, this isn't my area of competence. I see 2 or 3 in my learned vision, but if this is really that diagnosis, there's someone that can see this 100 times over better than I can. But it is my opinion that there's something here.
Okay. And then another question I had was why, I don't understand why, again, the treatment plan was developed right at the end of treatment and not at the beginning of treatment.
It may not have been printed or that particular one, because I think I specified that I created a treatment plan designed specifically for that, in my opinion, like highlighting those 2 or 3 characteristics or traits and then saying this would be the treatment, which would be, I'm not going to say the skills that come with it.
And I didn't see a treatment plan in the beginning of therapy for what you were going to be working on.
And that's fair. I may have not created that on this one because it may have been in the original couples folder. And that could have been something.
Okay.
I see what you're saying. Because it wasn't created toward the until the end in April.
I also thought, I looked at the notes and I noticed that in 16 of the 20, there's almost very similar verbiage for several sentences. Is that common practice for you?
I would say no.
And contacting the previous psychologist, again, that might have been helpful at the beginning rather than after therapy was concluded.
Yes.
So that I may have other ones. I don't know, Dr. Stewart, if you have questions too.
Yes.
Yes, Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Merlin, do you still, as you sit here this morning, consider the diagnosis to be, are those traits to continue to be something that needs to be further explored in future treatment for this individual?
I do.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Let me see if there are any further questions for Dr. Munnellan at this point.
I don't have any right now, Mr. Chair, but certainly I reserve the right to ask some clarification questions later on, if I may.
Sure. I mean, yeah, I was thinking of going into deliberations, and if as a result of deliberations, if we have any further questions, I'll allow that. So let's begin the deliberation process of this matter. Please keep in mind for those in attendance that the deliberations time is the time for the committee members to discuss the case amongst themselves without any interruptions from the complainants, attorneys, licensees, or any other individuals. So since Dr. Katarina was the lead member on this case, would you please start our deliberation process? You're muted, Dr. Katarina.
Okay, and so in looking at the statutes, I didn't see any specific statutes offhand, but I'm open that there's a violation. I think some of the steps were maybe not to the best professional judgment, and maybe could have been done differently. But I'm not sure that I saw anything that exactly violated one of the statutes. But I might have missed that, so I wanted input from others on the committee. So I do think that not having the treatment plan, having one at the end, having the notes be sort of boilerplate concerned me, not reaching out earlier to people, to the previous psychologists, using rule out for all those months. There are a lot of things that I didn't think were in the best professional manner, but I'm not sure that they actually violate one of the statutes. So that's my thoughts on this.
Thank you, Dr. Katarina. Dr. Stewart?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I certainly concur with Dr. Katarina. I think there are issues of concern for sure. The length of time, the lag time between the event in November and then the complaint filed in February, I think it's understandable. I think SR, it took that long to kind of cogitate on it and then to come up with and formulate a complaint. I think that's understandable. I'm at a loss. I think things could have been done differently, of course. I think Dr. Munnellan is... the rule out, sometimes we will discharge someone from an inpatient setting with a specific diagnosis has not been ruled out, and it still needs to be ruled out. So we do see that in the clinical world for sure. I think Dr. Munnellan did make efforts to supply SR with appropriate referrals, at least in his response to the board, as I read through it, there was about three or four different specific group practices that he had suggested. I think that going through this and coming from a position of trauma in his history, I think SR was susceptible is more sensitive than others, perhaps, to have an adverse response. I think the history certainly is wrought with experiences that should be explored. My sincere hope, SR, is that, that he will continue to, explore these things and to find someone with whom he can work and to continue treatment. Going back to the statutes, I'm still at a loss of any specific statutory violation. And so I'm not, I think things could have been done differently. The rule out may have been addressed each time, has still not been ruled out. These are traits, not a diagnosis. And so things could have been documented a little better, but I'm not finding any statutory violation.
And thank you, Dr. Stewart. Yes, Dr. Carolina.
I was just going to say, I mean, are you aware, Dr. Mundelin, there are specific tests that look at that type of diagnosis that could have been administered?
Yes, I am aware of those tests, and I don't own psychological tests.
Well, you can, no, but you can just order one.
Yes.
And they offer it online. I mean, you can order one, you could take it online, you know.
And I was hoping if that were the case that with when that person, no, it doesn't matter. But yes, I am aware that exists.
So I think that was why he was suggesting the referrals to people who were in his mind better equipped to do the evaluations and determine whether there's a diagnosis to be made there.
That's right.
As Dr. Mundelin said, that issue, that diagnosis and issue didn't even arise until April, after some 7 months of treatment, and then back populated when he printed onto, hey, I'm sorry, if the client could stop making hand motions, it would be less distracting. But Dr. Mundelin testified that it was in April when he first raised the concerns about these traits or characteristics that became a rule out. That was then placed in the chart. It back populated onto all of the old records, but it was in April when they had the conversation about this, and Dr. Mundelin at that point made the recommendation that the client see others and gave the list of referrals to him so that someone else could do that process of ruling out who Dr. Mundelin felt was more qualified to get into that in more detail. At that point, the client didn't want to stop seeing Dr. Mundelin. Dr. Mundelin said, I'll continue to see you until you find a new therapist, and they continued for a couple more months. So I just wanted to get that timeline.
Thank you, Ms. Burgess. I mean, we are aware of the timeline now. Thank you again, Dr. Mundelin, for interjecting. So we are still in deliberations at this point. I'm seeing sort of a consensus from Dr. Catrino and Dr. Stewart that while it doesn't rise to a statutory violation, there are some concerns. And I don't want to suggest anything one way or the other, but as the role of this committee is to either dismiss the complaints or refer to the full board for if this is even rising to a level of letter of concern, let's say, then that's the course of, those are the sort of two options that we as the committee can take into account during the deliberation process.
If you'll accept a motion, Mr. Chair, I can make one.
Sure.
I move that the complaint be dismissed.
I agree.
Yeah, okay, there's a motion and a second. In terms of dismissal, I tend to agree that, yes, there things could have been done differently. And, you know, everyone's situation is different. Everyone's sort of style is different. So, you know, I think this process that both SR and Dr. Mundelin have gone through with the committee, with the board, I think is a learning experience. I hope that you'll take some lessons from this and, implement, especially for Dr. Mundelin, maybe think of what you could have done differently based on the feedback you got from Dr. Stewart and Caterino. So I think there's a motion on the table. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. None opposed, the motion carries. And our staff will get in touch with both SR and Dr. Mundelin as to the next steps, if any.
I felt like the lawyer interrupted me. I was clearly saying that she was giving false statements. And I know you guys have already voted on this, but I really, before you voted, would have liked to have been given the opportunity to say, Mr. Reyes, I can see that you don't agree with what the lawyer is saying. Can you please?
Thank you, SR. I appreciate what you're saying. I mean, I fully understand. It is stressful. It is traumatic to sort of go through this process. But I mean, we have a certain process here. I mean, we all try to adhere to our rules and regulations. So thank you again for being here. And if you have any questions or concerns, you can always bring it up with staff going forward.
Staff.
So let's move on to the second item on the agenda, which is case number.
Thank you all. I'm gonna dip out. Thank you.
Thank you. So the second case for review is case number 23-41 for Carlos Vega. And Dr. Stewart, since you are the lead committee member on this, would you please provide the committee with a brief overview?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Vega is a licensed psychologist in the state of Arizona. Received his, graduated from Nova University in 1982. His license is good until January of 2024. And there's been a complaint by LW. And the complaint is that even though Dr. Vega did not have any firsthand contact or evaluation of LW, that Dr. Vega made statements from previous materials and documents. LW indicates that diagnostic statements were made, and that it's inappropriate because Dr. Vega did not interact with her and do an assessment of her to come to those diagnostic opinions. That Dr. Vega relied upon previous documents from Child Protective Services as well as other police reports that were in error, and that the diagnostic impressions were made there. Dr. Vega's response is that he never made a diagnosis of LW, and that he was simply citing other materials as formative in foundation materials as to describe the situation between LW and the children's father. There was a report rendered by Dr. Vega from an evaluation on September 9th, 2020 of the father, and that's in the packet of materials provided. Also provided are the working documents from Child Protective Services, including supervisory consultation unit summaries. And that's a thumbnail sketch.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. I see that LW is present. Thank you for being here, LW. If you wish to make a statement, you may do so now, and let's try to keep it within the 5 minutes. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you. My name is...
And so I know you're referring to yourself.
I forgot to edit out my name. I apologize.
No worries. You may continue.
My name is LW, and I filed this complaint against Dr. Vega for diagnosing me with a major mental illness in GW's 2020 psychological report. I've never met Dr. Vega, spoke to him, or interacted with him in any way. In fact, I've never been diagnosed with this disorder by any medical professional before or after Dr. Vega included his own diagnosis. In this psychological report, I'm 50 years old and I have never been diagnosed with, treated for, or for such mental illness. And it has been ruled out multiple times since this diagnosis was put in the report, which is why I submitted my current documentation showing I do not have it. Dr. Vega failed to reach out to my current therapist during the open DCS case at that time in 2020, which he had full access to and would have verified I didn't have any kind of that disorder and my complex diagnosis was trauma related. I was suffering from abuse and trauma and was properly diagnosed even before Dr. Vega did W's evaluation. And because of this misleading diagnosis in the report, other professionals have assumed I was personally seen by and evaluated by Dr. Vega as well, which is false. I don't even know Dr. Vega, have never been evaluated by him, and have not been a patient of his now or in the past. For Dr. Vega to write a made-up story and diagnose me with something I don't have is, in my opinion, unethical and caused me to suffer further emotional and physical abuse at the hands of GW, who threatened using this very evaluation to have me put in a mental hospital in order to keep ongoing abuse a secret while he continued to rape and psychologically abuse me in 2021, which I have evidence, and GW has admitted to the rough sex, leaving bruises on my inner thigh during a protection order hearing in 2021. 2021, our daughter made a disclosure of abuse against GW, which is now being investigated. Don't want to go into detail. She's since stated to various therapists since then that it happened multiple times and again in October 2021 after the children were reunified from foster care. I bring this up because due to this misleading diagnosis I've never been diagnosed with that Dr. Vegas gave me, it potentially caused the officials to not take mine or my daughter's claim seriously and hindered the investigation. The damage this false diagnosis caused is now ongoing and continues to cause trauma to my children and myself, why I finally filed a report. In fact, GW is still working at Sylvan teaching small children with my daughter's ongoing claims, potentially at risk of harming another child, which is all. I didn't make anything up or hallucinate the abuse, as my claims have turned out to be true, according to my children. Documentation and multiple medical professionals, along with therapeutic interventionist. I don't have what Dr. Vega diagnosed me with. I was never diagnosed with it before. I was being abused at the hands of my husband and reached out for help. Dr. Vega was misleading in his report and re-victimized me and my children. GW was taking care of me. GW wasn't taking care of me, as Dr. Vega's story is written in this evaluation. GW was abusing me and then used this evaluation and diagnosis against me to keep doing it. I was also forced into marriage counseling with my abuser, which the counselor ended up wanting GW to go into the metals for his sex addiction. Dr. Vega failed to recognize the extent of GW's sex addiction and profile. In closing, I hope my complaint stops Dr. Vega from doing this to another person or family suffering from domestic violence. It has caused complex damage to my children and myself, were diagnosed with. As a survivor, I don't want this to happen to another woman and her children. If Dr. Vega had personally spoken to me, he wouldn't have diagnosed me with this disorder or wrote the evaluation in the way he did, but he never met me. Thank you for allowing me to speak. This wasn't easy, as it's ongoing.
Thank you, LW, for giving us a statement, and thank you for being here. At this time, let me see if the committee members have any questions to ask LW. Yes, Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. LW, I do appreciate you being here this morning. As you've already indicated, I'm sure it was not easy to to come here and to speak to this issue. Thank you.
Yes. So I was wondering, did you said that Dr. Vega could have contacted your therapist or the psychologist that was evaluating you? Because both parents were asked to be evaluated, correct? So yeah. That was available to him.
It was available to him. There was nothing he wouldn't have needed. It was an open DCS case at the time. He had all of my records available to him. I've since spoke to the therapist that I had then, and he said he was not reached out to, but he would have verified that I did not have this diagnosis. And I remember that he was actually concerned. I mean, I know this is hearsay, but he did tell me he was concerned about the way the report was wrote because it wasn't accurate in any way. I was being abused and he was covering it up. And
I want to ask Dr. Stewart a question. Is that okay? Yeah. Okay. So I read, you know, where Dr. Vega referred to the previous records he had received. Right. And then he said these symptoms were present from the other person listing them, the social worker. And he said at one point there was that full diagnosis made. But I went through that. I could not find where they made that exact diagnosis in any of the records provided to him, and I might have missed this. There were symptoms and adjectives, but I don't see that formal specific diagnosis was made. But Dr. Vega said it was one. He said there was one case, and I missed it, so I went over it many times. I thought maybe you found it.
I did not see a specific diagnosis made. But there were symptoms of, again, as in our previous case, had features of, but never a formal diagnosis. There are statements by the unit consultant, who is a psychologist, and
that. But did you see that Dr. Vega said that looked at the records and there was at one point that diagnosis was given? I saw that statement and I didn't see it.
I didn't see a diagnosis given. Descriptions. No, I did not see a specific diagnosis. That's correct.
Okay.
So I think, I mean, I don't see Dr. Vega and Dr. Vega's attorney, if he has any present. So I think, I mean, if there are no questions for LW, we can go into our committee deliberations.
I do have a statement I would like to make that when I reached out for help, I was very anxious. I didn't know I had the trauma diagnosis that I have. And I was actually told that the way I was presenting by not being able to finish my sentences was due to the dissociation from my trauma. So those symptoms can be from other things and not that disorder. And without fully evaluating me, how could Dr. Vega have known that? And I went through the DCS records and they weren't accurate. So
thank you.
Records, if he would have reached out to me, he didn't reach out to any of my therapists. He didn't even get my current records. I mean, if he would have got my current records, he wouldn't have made this diagnosis.
Thank you, LW. So let's get into the deliberation process. And again, as a reminder, this is for the committee members to deliberate the case amongst themselves without interruptions from complainants, licensees, attorneys, et cetera, or any other individuals. So Dr. Stewart, do you want to get us started?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I very much would have hoped that Dr. Vega would have been with us this morning. So I don't know what is going on there. The statements made in his foundational part of his report describes the diagnostic impression or the features supporting a some very specific terms, some diagnostic terms, but not a diagnosis. And these were made in the DCS records, as well as from the psychologist, the unit supervisor, in her report as well, signed off on in a committee. So I had wanted to ask Dr. Vega why he did not, if he did, why it was not documented that he did reach out to the other evaluating examiner for LW. I didn't see in his report nor in his response to the board about reaching out. And also, I would like for him specifically to show me where the DCS documents listed a specific diagnosis in question. I just don't have answers to those. So I think that we need more information. I can't fully assess this without some additional information.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. I'm just going to say I agree with that. I mean, I think it would have been better if we have had Dr. Vega here. So maybe, you know, we can request more information, and I think staff can follow up with Dr. Vega, and maybe we can then, you know, if Dr. Vega would be available for a complaint screening committee meeting, we can reschedule this one or I mean, I don't want to foreclose any other deliberations we have, but just in response to what Dr. Stewart was saying, I think we have that option, I believe.
So I had a legal question. So if we look at the statutes in R, 16R, I don't know if this applies because it's a DCS case, but failing to obtain a client's informed and written consent to release personal or confidential information. And I don't know if that, I was wondering if that would apply.
Apply to
this case, would this be a violation because the LW did not give permission to have Dr. Vega give that diagnosis? But I was trying to see if that would be violating that statute. I didn't know.
Well, he would. I mean, to the extent that Dr. Vega had access to the DCS investigation and the court reports, and he would have received that information as part of his evaluation of the father in this case.
But I mean, when he put the diagnosis in his report, without getting permission from LW to have her diagnosis in the GW's report. Is that violating anything legally?
I think that there could be, there may be some issues there if in fact a diagnosis was made in that report. But that would be a referral to the full board if this committee thinks that there is, that is an issue.
Okay.
And I apologize for interrupting. I just had a question for Dr. Caterina to clarify. What page in the PDF file is the diagnosis that he made? I saw the
I had to find that, but it was the beginning when he, in the report, he said something, she is...
I saw the reference to the first page about him referring to the DCS documentation, but you had referenced he had made the diagnosis and I didn't see that. So I just
let me find this on the results of assessment procedures. And it's the third line. And then I don't see that's why anywhere in the documents that they say that she has that diagnosis.
Thank you.
So I think, I mean, Dr. Catarino and Dr. Stewart's initial sort of reaction of getting more information is consistent with what I'm sensing you're thinking, Dr. Catarino.
Yes, I agree.
We need to have more information, you know, what documents were reviewed from Dr. Vega, and if he's available for a subsequent CSC meeting, then we would encourage him to come and, you know, address the committee's questions at that point.
So would this be another CSC or would it be full board?
Just to clarify the options, the committee could table its review, direct subpoena, staff to send a subpoena for his attendance at a future CSC meeting. However, if the committee believes that there may be potential violations based on what they're seeing today, they could forward the case to the board to conduct an initial review and also request that staff send a subpoena for his attendance at that board meeting.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Michelson, for those options. I didn't have all of those options in mind, so that expands the scope of some of the things I was thinking of. So I'm leaning on Dr. Stewart and Dr. Catarino to think through those options and see what we can do as a committee.
Yes.
Him not being present this morning is a concern. And so my tendency would be to refer to the full board to have an informal hearing.
That's what I thought too. Yeah.
Do you want to make that a motion, Dr. Stewart?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that we refer this matter to the full board for consideration and to follow up with Ms. Michelson's indication of offering a subpoena to Dr. Vega to appear at the full board meeting.
A second.
There's a motion and a second. And just for clarification, so the referral is just for an initial review with the board, correct? Yeah, yes. I see. Ms. Michelson saying yes.
And with the direction for staff to issue a subpoena for his attendance whenever that meeting date is scheduled. And typically when the cases are referred to the board, the committee will cite a potential violation. So I'm not sure if Dr. Stewart wants to do that as part of his motion.
Yes, a potential violation would be, I don't have the... If someone has to provide a diagnosis without seeing the patient. So
I think unprofessional conduct.
Unprofessional conduct.
Maybe. Violating an ethical standard adopted by the board, DD.
Well, then you would also have to cite that ethical standard if that applies. You could cite engaging in activities as a psychologist that are unprofessional by current standards of practice, with the current standard of practice being that diagnosis should only be provided to the patient.
Yeah, I was thinking before O or R or both. Or, yeah.
I amend my motion to refer to the full board for ethical violation, standard O, provisions of current practice.
And is there anything in the ethics code that we would want to give for notice purposes?
I'd have to pull it up and look right now. That would take me a few minutes.
No worries. We have time.
Okay. So let's see.
Maybe something in the basis for assessment, which is section 9.01.
Okay. Maybe. Let's see if there's something else too. Basis for scientific and professional judgments. Um, What do you think, Dr. Stewart? I'll pull up that 9.01. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm looking at 9-point basis for assessments.
What about
someone? I think Dr. Caterino, that you suggested 9.03 in consent and assessments.
I was looking, what about 2.04, basis for scientific and professional judgments? Psychologists' work is based on established scientific and professional knowledge of the discipline? Or no? Because it would be, let's see.
I think at this point, we don't know.
We don't have enough information, maybe.
Information. So
yeah.
We can list those. I think that's appropriate. And some of them, of course, will fall out as we get additional information. So yeah. 0.04 and then 9.01 and
9.03. Okay. Yeah, I think that we need more information to really even know this.
Yeah.
And just to clarify, these are just potential violations that are being forwarded to the board. And of course, the board would do their full review and ultimately determine what violations, if any, are applicable here.
Okay.
It also provides sort of it's a notice function. We provide notice to the licensee that, okay, these are the potential violations. So they might come prepared to the meeting to address those. So, some of these may just not be the ultimate sort of, you know, findings of the full board when the full board reviews, but our job is to sort of just provide that notice and refer it further to the full board.
Do I need to clarify my motion again?
Yes, please.
Okay. I move that this matter be referred to the full board for an initial review. Suggesting ethical violations of sections 9.01, 9.03, and 2.04.
A second.
Oh, and also, I believe violation O. Was that?
Yes. Yes, the statute current, in the statute.
Current standard practice, O.
So 16O, 16DD, as it relates to those ethical violations.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So there is a motion. Dr. Caterino, your second stands?
Yes, it does.
Okay. There is a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. None opposed. The motion carries. So with that, we have come to our least favorite part of the agenda, which is adjournment. so I make a motion to adjourn. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. The committee is adjourned. It is 9:52. Thank you, everyone, for being here. And thank you to staff. And thank you, Ms. Campbell, for